Heard at Sports Radio every weekday morning from 7 to 10 a.m.
Coming up on Friday's show, it's a free-for-all as usual. We'll talk with Chad Forbes of NFL Draft Bites about all the things going on in the NFL. Mike Sauter from Heard at Sports stops by with all his takes on the latest local sports action. And, of course, we'll do our weekly check-in with former Husker and current pizza shop owner Matt Versal.
Take a dive into the latest news and all things sports. Heard at Sports Radio with Ravi Lula and Damon Benning.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in on a Friday at Tail Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency. For all your equipment financing needs, go Currency. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, and you, thanks for spending time. You can join us today on Hail Varsity Radio at 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Toll free for you around the Hail Varsity Radio Network. And find us on Twitter and watch the show as well on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, the Hail Varsity YouTube channel, ESPN Lincoln Facebook and Twitter, and follow the Hail Varsity Radio Twitter handle as well at HVarsity Radio. Can email the show, Chris at HailVarsity.com in the morning. Of course, Damon and Andrew take care of you 7 to 9 with coffee and cream. Can watch that on the Hail Varsity Twitter handle and YouTube channel and catch us, of course, 4 to 6. Well, should be an all right weekend, Nebraska and Penn State Sunday for basketball. Elijah is all geared up for flag football and the what used to be the Pro Bowl.
And 50-degree temperatures this weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to get the grill dusted off, I think. That's the plan anyway. And we'll just gear up. A lot of football to cover next week. Some special guests lined up for Huskers and the Super Bowl. Today we'll spend time with Jacob Padilla, get his week that's been in the world of high school basketball, Omaha, Lincoln, surrounding areas, and of course his take on that, Nebraska basketball, some touches on recruiting, of course, with Jacob, and we'll get there in about 20 minutes with him. Some thoughts from Fred Hoiberg, a win that Nebraska needs on Sunday. Bill Dolman with us, NBC Sports, the Pride of Fairbury in NBC Sports, and the professor. In 1 hour, Brady Altman's joins us in hour two, and then Burke's Best Bets. Daddy will have some early looks at some of the Super Bowl prop bets, so the table set for you there. Going to start off today, and it seems like every Friday the last month we've done a Dylan Raiola Friday. We were fortunate enough to spend time with Mitch Sherman earlier this week. He's a regular Tuesday guest for us. And his story about his trip to Arizona came out today on The Athletic. And really insightful, just a really wonderfully well-done story by Mitch. Is he caught up with several folks? I ask you to go check that out. And that is from the mom and dad, Raiola, of course, and then you got Drew Stanton, the quarterback tutor, and some other folks that are kind of in that Raiola orbit, as well as just what's the, not necessarily the timeline. It's hard to read into that other than when some spring visits are scheduled. But just really good insight to life as Dylan Raiola, what he's gone through, what they thought he was going to do. I mean, Raiolas are a family alignment when you look at Donnie and Dominic. And just what was going on in Hawaii with the Kreutz family. Olin Kreutz was a stud center for Washington, but part of Hawaii. And Nebraska got out there and got Dominic recruited. And, of course, he was incredible here in Lincoln. And you've been a center for 14 years, and you have a couple of quarterbacks that are really super talented. Dylan's little brother is already kind of shot up from a height and strength standpoint. So pretty fascinating read, and a good read into just how the race is. The patience that the family's going to use when it comes to making the decision, and just who's sticking out. I mean, Georgia was on it early, right? I mean, there seems to be a good connection and relationship with Kirby and the Riolas from the get-go, because they were the first to offer it at an early camp. But then you have USC in the picture with Lincoln Riley and his connection. And then, of course, you have Nebraska going full tilt on the Riola push. And Nebraska's stuck out not only because of the family connection, but also, Elijah, they've stuck out just because of the pursuit. It's not that SC and Georgia and Oregon haven't kept recruiting Riola, and Michigan either. But you have Nebraska that I don't want to say was late to the scene, but it's a new scene with Matt Rhule.
Yeah, I mean, think about the likes of Georgia and USC and Oregon, the type of guys they recruit. You know, whenever
think of their programs right now.
Whenever you're going after 12 other five-star kids in the class of 2024, I think I understand that pursuit angle from Nebraska, where, you know what, Nebraska's got their one guy they locked in on. I'm not saying they're not looking at other high-level athletes, but Dylan Riola is clear priority number one. And whenever you're Georgia, you know what, you can say,
you're a priority, but we have other five stars that we'll go get.
And it's your priority, but if the number one quarterback in the country says no, we'll get the number eight quarterback in the country. It's okay.
Or number two.
Or yeah, whatever you want to do. Like that's what I'm saying. And when you look at, I don't want to call it desperation from Nebraska, but just that clear agenda that you're our number one guy, it's got to make you feel good whenever that's the school you pretty much grew up rooting for. And I did wonder with this article, I wonder if Dylan and Dayton got their start playing quarterback because Dom needed somebody to snap it to in the offseason in the backyard.
He's bored.
Yeah. He's like, hey, I need to get
Sean, line up. We're going to work on 3rd and 8 shotgun snaps.
Yeah. While you're at it, give me a 3-step drop while you're back there.
Well, some of the things that stick out, I'm not going to lay out the whole article for you, but, you know, Drew Stanton, the guy that played a long time in the NFL, Michigan State guy, and he's kind of a mentor, kind of a quarterback coach, tutor. You have that aspect, and he's making the projections that just from the physical traits equal being an elite quarterback. The talent, the arm talent at a high level as he's going into his senior year, Elijah. But also, you can have all the arm talent in the world, and you can be a guy that can be an athlete and make plays. But really, when we talk about quarterbacks in that freshman, sophomore, junior year of high school, what stands out? What separates? Yeah, you got to be able to make, air quote, all the throws. But what's your processing like? And we've heard the term quick blinker, right? We've heard that for years. But it's true in processing. Can you, first and foremost, get your offense into a good play? Can you take care of the football? Can you avoid making mistakes? And then when you see a coverage, what's the matchup? What's the advantage? What's the defense giving you? Can you connect? Can you execute? And is your mind quick enough to work? Can your mind tell the body to go make the play and then go do it? And so far, so good. But just reading into some of the quotes, you know, on Lincoln Riley, a really special guy to me, track record with quarterbacks is amazing. That's pretty high praise, and it's well-earned, right? It's earned from Lincoln Riley with what he did at Oklahoma, and then despite his departure, how it's rubbed many down in red dirt country wrong, things look all right. He put a really good class together at USC. Now, how do they transition to the Big Ten's the big question. Listen, if for whatever reason, you know, if I'm putting myself in the shoes of parent with major talent that's being recruited. And, you know, I don't know. Junior's going to go to college. I'm proud of him for that. I don't know where Junior's baseball career is going to take him. I know he's working hard at it. But it is important. It is important to know, is Lincoln Riley going to be at USC in 5 years? And with his paycheck, he should be. He should want to be. But I think it's very real that a number of these college football coaches, if the right opportunity happens, Ryan Day will go to the NFL. If the right opportunity happens, Lincoln Riley was sure as hell jumped to the NFL. Mm-hmm. Just because of the, and this is the term it comes to me as, the headache that college football has become for college coaches. The headache with NIL. The headache with year-round recruiting. Right? The headache with the transfer portal. You're a really good coach, and coaches right now have to re-recruit their roster, period, because it's too easy to leave.
Well, I mean, look at the stat we talked about yesterday. Over 70% of top quarterback recruits in the country end up transferring, at least based on the stat numbers we've seen over the past couple of years. And could that level out as we get more adjusted to the transfer portal? Maybe, but that's what we're at right now, is if you have a top 100 quarterback on your roster, there's a 70% chance before the end of his 4 years he will transfer.
Well, and you look at the back to Max Olsen's story, you look at the number of quarterbacks, 8 of the 31 top players were 31 of the top 100 were quarterbacks, mm-hmm. okay, in that span of 2017 through 2020. And of that, 8 of them ended up staying, and 2 of them became all-conference. Everyone else took off. Of the 31, 8 stayed, 2 all-conference, and the rest of them have been serviceable, been pretty good. But do you get a kid long enough to make him be a difference maker, assuming you don't hit that he's Trevor Lawrence and he's away you go 6 games in and starting as a true freshman? I mean, Ohio State's run of quarterbacks, majority of those kids, they at least had a redshirt freshman year. They redshirted that freshman year, and then by year two, their redshirt freshman season, they came in, won the job, and off they went. They had a lot of help and talent around them because these schools that have been playing guys young at quarterback do pretty well. But the transfer market, the secondary market, has been huge. Look at Hendon Hooker. I mean, look at him. Look at Rattler. Look at Williams. I mean, Caleb Williams is doing fine in Oklahoma, but he blew up at SC, for God's sake. Was great. I mean, he had great talent around him. Hooker had pretty elite talent around him, too, but he was a difference maker this year for Tennessee.
Or the ultimate transfer quarterback, Joe Burrow.
Sure.
I mean, you can just keep on listing
names.
Doesn't it
just make you pull your hair out? How the hell did Ohio State not keep him? And I know that he got hurt during spring, and it was a grad transfer. It wasn't just a transfer deal. He had put 3.5 years in. Now, he got beat out, air quote, by a first rounder. But Joe Burrow's incredible. I mean, Ohio State probably goes further with him at quarterback if you want to do revisionist history. So if I'm a head football coach, I'm absolutely going after, because my mantra is we are going to build through high school and not portal. That said, you've got 2 portal quarterbacks for Nebraska right now that are going to give you a good chance to win differently. Pocket guy versus a dual threat, Sims and Casey Thompson. Nebraska right now, you want to win the recruiting battle, yes, from a PR standpoint. You want to get in and prove and show other future recruits, come here, I'll get you right. You'll do fine off the field. You'll do great on the field. We'll win together. High school-wise, yes, you want to do that. You don't want to be reliant on transfers. But the reality is you're almost better off getting a guy the second time around. That's where more of these quarterbacks and schools have hit it big. Very rarely do you have the Trevor Lawrence situation where he's there for 3 years as a true freshman starter, again, 6 games in, similar to the Tommy Frazier situation. But for the most part, man, you've had guys that you pick up in the portal or they transfer, LSU, Joe Burrow, the Clifford kid at Penn State is a rarity. I mean, he was there for about 3 years. They won a lot of ball games with him.
But look at some of the top quarterback recruits in the conference over the past 5 years. Graham Mertz at Wisconsin was a huge steal, and now he's into the transfer portal, headed somewhere else. You have
Mertz ended. Was Mertz the kid that ended up at Notre Dame? Yeah, he ended up going to Notre Dame. He had a great year his senior year at Notre Dame. Could never really get over, that hump in Wisconsin because he got replaced by a younger quarterback. And that quarterback was kind of god awful, except against Nebraska.
Look, you got Tagovailoa at Maryland. He's a transfer from Alabama. You have
Bama's the only place that didn't lose.
I mean, McNamara was a high level quarterback, and now he's off to Iowa. When you look at the conference, C.J. Stroud's about the only guy who is stuck in state at his program. Everyone else, I mean, you mentioned Sean Clifford too, but he's the rarity. I mean, everyone else is a transfer from somewhere. Casey Thompson, Nebraska, transfer. Jeff Sims in Nebraska, transfer.
Like Aiden O'Connell was a walk on.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's different as well, but. Yeah, you're going to, a lot of times, you're not guaranteed, you might have a good season, but, I mean, McNamara, I mean, dude got replaced. Jalen Hurts got replaced. It's nuts. Just because you have a good year doesn't mean you're guaranteed to keep the job, because you want to keep the kid, the next stud, you want to give him some time. That could be a little disconcerting if you're somebody. Now, not everyone handles it as classily as Jalen Hurts did. Interesting. So, yeah, just keep that in mind. Maybe you don't win the battle, per se, if you're Nebraska for Dylan Raiola. But just the way quarterbacks go, specifically, you can win the war. Get them with a bit of an edge, a chip on their shoulder, and a new area code. I don't know that that happens with Raiola. I don't know that that happens with the other five-star quarterbacks for the upcoming class of 2023, but history has said the last 5-6 years of quarterbacks that have been elite, they don't stay where they start.
And yeah, I think you should also add that the scouting reports out there on Raiola and my own personal eye test tells me that's a guy who's going to come in and start his freshman season. Just from the pure talent, arm talent the guy has, physical talent, he's got a mind for the game. He does not strike me as the type of guy who's going to come in.
If he does, you better go win 9 or 10 games with a quarterback that beat him out.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's kind of obvious. We'll check in with Jacob Padilla. Good to be with you on a Friday. Hail Varsity, presented by Currency. Get some thoughts from Jacob Padilla on Nebraska recruiting and some hoops. That's on the way.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Thanks for spending time. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by Currency. I don't know how you finished your week off, but Maciejczyk just cranked out 31 reps of 225. That's Elijah Herbal type numbers.
No. I think I got 10, maybe.
Okay.
10? I think 10 was probably the best I ever did.
I am not going to even lie to the world and say, yeah, I got two. Jacob Padilla is with us. Jacob, how much can you bench? Let's just go there. Let's make it that tough.
That's going to be one of those.
Jacob's interviews. Just going to hold up his left hand and say, I'm injured. Take off.
It's
better now.
Just got cleared to start playing basketball again, but did not get cleared to lift heavy weights yet. So let's just go with that.
Yeah, no weight training. I love it. That's pretty good. Jacob, we'll stay with football for a moment before we get to hoops. And Coach Rhule finished up with the 2023 class, and we'll talk to Brady Altman's in a little bit. But I want to get your take, Jacob, on, I guess, freshman impact. Not necessarily portal, but freshman impact. And are you just like, you know, talk to me after the spring game? Is that the thought bubble right now? Or do you think there's any freshman, I guess, you're intrigued by that could work? Or let me put it this way. Do you think there's some position switches with some of the kids coming in because there's a lot of opportunity, offensive, defensive line with some of the in-state kids that Rule brought in. And, of course, Malachi Coleman, what he can do offensively and defensively.
Yeah. I think the wait until spring game certainly to kind of see how the roster shakes out because right now they're at over 100 scholarship caliber players at least we'll go with. And the limit's obviously 85. So we'll see how many of these guys are still on the roster once we get through the spring, once the transfer portal opens back up and guys have had a chance to kind of feel things out, see where they are on the depth chart and decide what they want to do moving forward. I think you hit on a good one, defensive line there, edge guys, kind of just with where they are there. A guy like Maverick Noonan, I think, is a guy that kind of like Garrett Nelson can earn his way onto the field. Maybe not necessarily a big role early on, but just with how hard he goes with some of his natural ability, wouldn't be surprised to see him out there getting a few reps here and there. At the very least, I think we'll see him play the four games to maintain the red shirt. I do think we will see him year one, which probably won't be the case for a lot of the freshmen with kind of obviously they added 11 transfers as well. You got a lot of guys coming back, bodies, if not necessarily a ton of proven contributors at every position. There might be a few spots here or there where some younger guys can push through, but I don't know that I'd ever go in expecting true freshmen, especially with how many of these guys are kind of like developmental prospects more so than like four-star ready-made guys. We know that those are the kind of the guys that Matt Rhule and his staff gravitate towards, guys that maybe have the measurables that maybe they aren't great football players right now, but they've got the basis to become ones. And so I don't know that we'll see a ton of early impact. I think it is a little different than what he inherited at Baylor, where basically the whole roster got gutted and he had to play guys freshmen early on. There are upperclassmen here. They've got enough coming back to where I don't think he's going to be forced to play those guys. And now it's a matter of the guys that have been here or that are coming from other programs to kind of hold off those young guys and show, hey, you can roll with us in these roles.
Jacob Bedell is with us here at Hail Varsity Radio. And Jacob, how much do you think the spring is going to factor in with these young guys? We know how important it's going to be for these position battles with Nebraska being quote-unquote over the scholarship limit. You understand how important spring ball is going to be for that, but how important do you think it's going to be for some of these incoming freshmen to make a mark early and kind of give the coaches an early indication that, you know what, I'm going to be ready for some snaps this fall?
I think it's most important to the coaching staff in general. You can only learn so much about players through tape study and just being around them. You got to see them out there in real football settings. And this coaching staff, with the guys coming back, with the guys that they just signed, they won't get to do that until the spring, at least for the early enrollees. It'll be big for those freshmen to kind of, I mean, that's kind of why we're seeing so many kids enroll early, is to get that spring under their belt so they have a better kind of, they're more settled. They've kind of gotten used to the college life thing. They've gotten kind of the adjustment out of the way early on. They've learned what it's like to lift in a college strength and conditioning program, so that once they hit the summer, they're used to everything and they can just kind of focus on getting better and earning roles. So that's big for every freshman. The difference here is the coaches are also trying to learn about all the guys that are coming back they hadn't coached previously, in addition to learning what they have with the freshmen. So I think looking at the spring, it's more important for the coaches than any individual part of the roster or players or anybody. Obviously, again, spots are up for grabs at every single position, but the coaches have to figure out, all right, who are those best guys? What do we have that we like? What do we have that maybe we need some of the young guys or the newcomers to push these guys and jump ahead of them maybe, or force them to up their game in order to hold those spots? So there's a lot to get done this spring with where the roster is now.
Jacob Padilla joining us from HailVarsity.com and magazine at @JacobPadilla_. Jacob, to basketball, big one Sunday for Nebraska basketball. A more favorable setup. Penn State's good, not great. Nebraska hung in with them not long ago out in Happy Valley. Nebraska coming back home from a kind of an extended road trip. They had moments of competitiveness at Maryland. Turnovers the issue. Same way for the game against Illinois, where they didn't score down the stretch. They were right there in it. But man, and I know you asked Fred about the turnover situation and the cause of the turnovers. Are you surprised that some of the older guys are the ones making the mistakes?
I guess not necessarily surprised. They have to get better. Like, especially like both what Derek and Fred were talking about today, just the kind of unforced stuff, the sloppy stuff. To a certain extent, when you're like, they really have to work hard to create offensive opportunities. And you've got freshmen stepping up into expanded roles. So with that will come some turnovers and that type of thing. But you can't have the double dribble in transition, the travel in the half court that's not even forced, the kind of one-handed lazy passes versus making the fundamental play there, like that type of stuff. You have to clean that stuff up. Like sometimes the other team's going to force turnovers, and you just have to try to limit those live ball ones in particular as much as you can. They're also creating, committing so many unforced turnovers at this point that it's just not allowing them to even compete. We're just seeing them lose the possession battle game after game, because you look at it all season long, one of their biggest problems has been they can't hit threes. Well, in the last three games, they've shot the three ball well, but the other team is getting more shots because of all the turnovers. Not only are they getting more shots, they're getting transition opportunities. They're getting two-on-one fast breaks. They're getting breakaways, those type of things that put points directly on the board that there's nothing really you can do about defensively. So they're just fighting such an uphill battle because of that. So the good news is Penn State does not force a lot of turnovers. They are 354th in the country in opponent turnover percentage. So if there is a team, if they come out and commit 15-plus turnovers in this game, then there's a serious problem, especially with the emphasis they put on it recently. This is a game where they should be able to slow down, execute their stuff, and hopefully find a way to get good shots up. Penn State's defense is pretty good at contesting shots and forcing misses and that type of thing, but they're not the pressure, forced turnovers type of defense that we've seen give Nebraska so many problems this season. So this is a chance to, all right, settle down, reset, focus on what we're doing well, really lock in, be better focused, and give yourself a chance to compete by possessing the ball.
Jacob, a common sentiment that I've seen and heard is that this team right now, it kind of feels like it's relapsed back into some problems that it faced over the first 3 years of Fred Hoiberg's era at Nebraska. And I want to get your take on that. Is that a fair evaluation? Because some of the things that you just said kind of feel like some of the same things we've been talking about for a couple of years now. Turnovers, rebounding, just really not playing the same kind of fundamentals that you need to win in the Big Ten. So is that a fair assessment on your part, or you think it's off?
I think the biggest problem right now is just talent. Again, some of this stuff is they're having to try so hard to offset that lack of talent, that they're just playing better teams. And that's what we're seeing, I think, more so than them not necessarily doing the right things. Like Derek Walker's not failing to buy in, or like they're not trying on defense. They're not necessarily executing at the same rate, but I don't think it's for maybe the same reasons we've seen in the past. I think at this point, just with where the roster is, they've just lost too much talent. They weren't that talented to begin with, and you lose two of your starters. Now you've got freshmen that are playing a lot more than maybe you wanted them to this year, in bigger roles, and that puts so much stress on your more experienced guys, where Derek Walker has to do so much. Sam Griesel has to do so much that, especially as teams realize that and focus their defense on them, now it becomes even harder. And that's where some of these turnovers come from. And that's how you maybe get sped up thinking like, all right, I got to make a play here. And you try to do too much and get yourself into trouble. So that's kind of, I think right now, most of the problems are stemming from, they're just not talented enough. Everything is so hard. The margin for error is so slim. That it's kind of just exacerbating whatever problems they may have.
Jacob, we'll get to high school here about a minute before we got to take a hard break. Big Ten, is Purdue going to go down? Indiana gets to host them tomorrow.
that'll be really fun with the way that Indiana's been playing lately with Trace Jackson Davis right there. Like if Trace Jackson Davis is going to have any chance at making it a competition for Player of the Year, he's got to come out and dominate this matchup. Obviously, they're coming off the loss to Maryland after winning, what, 5 in a row. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's they get them. Yeah, they get Purdue there in Bloomington. Kempom's got Purdue favored by 2, but that's a game that could go either way. So hopefully it'll be a fun one. Not that fun if Purdue just kind of runs away with things. I'd be okay with making a little bit more of a competitive race down the stretch. And again, just two of the best players in the conference going head to head. Similar kind of production, but very different styles, mm-hmm. very different body types. But they both are the focal points of their team and probably the two best players in the conference.
Jacob, hang tight. We'll get your prep weekend preview here in a moment. Thanks for spending time. More with Jacob Bedilla. Hail Varsity continues. Like what you hear? High-quality radio and podcast is part of what we do at Hail Varsity. Hey, it's Chris Schmidt with Hail Varsity Radio, and I wanted to offer listeners of the Hail Varsity Radio Show podcast $10 off the price of an annual subscription. That means that you can get everything we do. 10 issues of our monthly magazine, our annual football yearbook, and all the premium content we produce at HailVarsity.com. Just go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe and enter in the promo code GBR for $10 off a full year of Hail Varsity. That's HailVarsity.com/subscribe, promo code GBR.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big thanks to Jacob Bedilla for hanging out, going a little OT with us here. Pretty good weekend of hoops. I have not had basketball this week, so I'll have 3 games next week, Jacob. But Motsi has Southwest Northeast here locally tonight. I know it's a busy night in the metro as well, and I'll have Southeast and Millard North Tuesday of next week, which will be big time, and Southeast has cranked out their 7th in a row. Observations from the week that's been, and what are you looking at this weekend?
Yeah, mentioned Southwest, obviously. Down a couple of players. Westside bounced back big time on Tuesday to beat them. Westside, a team that had been struggling, and now Southwest is kind of in their own rut. We'll see if they can get out of that shorthanded against Northeast. I think obviously the big game tonight is Prep at Bellevue West in the Metro rematch of the Metro Final there. I mean, I think you got to have Bellevue West as kind of the favorite there, but we'll see if Prep kind of learned anything from that first matchup where they were in it in the first half and just couldn't sustain it for the full 32. But outside the Metro, a big one tonight, I think, is Crete at Wahoo. It's kind of an interesting matchup there. Crete right up there, top 3-4 in B, and Wahoo right up there near the top of C1, coming off the big win over Platteview in their conference tournament. So that's a big one tonight. And then tomorrow, there's some good matchups as well. Most of them later in the night. Southeast at Prep, I think, is a really interesting one, considering the run that Southeast has been on recently, how hot they've been. Obviously, they were at the tail end of all the Lincoln schools, and now they're risen right up near the top of them. So that'll be a big one. And then Pius will get it shot at Bellevue West on Saturday night as well. So those are a few of the big ones this weekend on tap.
Jacob, as you look ahead at Bellevue West schedule, they're still undefeated this year. They have Prep, Pius, Lincoln Southeast, Millard North, and Omaha Westside all remaining on their
close
schedule.
I mean, that's a close.
They have Bellevue East in there as well, and they have an out of state matchup against a team from Maryland. So that'll be interesting. But as you look at that schedule as it stands right now, do you see them falling in the regular season, or do you think that chance at a perfect season is still up there for Bellevue West?
I think it's going to be tough for anybody in the state to beat them at this point. That watch out next Saturday. I'll be there. Just got it cleared. Shout out to Drake Keeler. He's going to cover the Nebraska at Wisconsin game for me next Saturday, so I can go spend all day in Gridiron for the Heartland Hoops Classic. And Bellevue West will take on Bishop Walsh out of Maryland there. That's going to be a tough team. So if they're going to go down, that would probably be it. If they get through that, obviously like you said, there's some big matchups down the stretch there, but they've kind of taken care of business in every big matchup so far. They've already beat number two, beat basically everybody by double digits they played. Just beat Sioux City, an undefeated Sioux City East team, pretty handily on Tuesday. So Belle West right now, they just look like, and the thing is, they've been winning when they haven't even been playing great offensively. Like they found a way to win decisively when they're not playing their best basketball. And that's a mark of a truly great team. And a team that's on a separate tier from kind of everybody they're playing, where you catch them on an off day and you still can't keep up with them. Everybody's capable of having an off night. It just takes one bad day, a team shooting lights out uncharacteristically. Belle West, shots don't fall for them for it to happen, but they're definitely, I think, the heavy favorite to sweep Nebraska, at least in the regular season. But again, next Saturday, I have not seen, and I don't know anything about Bishop Walsh, but I know Tino only brings in really good teams from out of state for this event, so that'll be a real test.
Jacob, enjoy your coverage as always, bud, and thanks for spending time with us to talk basketball and some football. Have a good weekend, and we'll check in next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
There he is, Jacob Padilla with us from HailVarsity.com and magazine at @JacobPadilla_. And let's hear a little bit from Fred. We'll get back to some football thoughts. Bill Dolman's about 20 minutes away. Brady Altman's and Danny Burke next hour. Can email Chris@HailVarsity.com. But Fred kicked off the presser and was kind of focused on Penn State, but he laid out some of his frustrations, and Jacob echoed it, where, listen, Nebraska has been hurting Nebraska. They aren't as talented as some of the opponents they're facing, yes, but you don't need to give any help. And Nebraska's, well, been handing out a lot of turnovers, but here's Fred from this morning.
You know, big thing for us, we have to get off to a good start. We have to start valuing possessions, taking care of the basketball, and we're just shooting ourselves in the foot right now. In the last two games, we had 19 turnovers against Maryland, and we had 15 at Illinois, and still had a chance. We had a lead with 11 minutes left in that game at Illinois, even though we turned it over for the first five possessions in that second half. So that's what it's going to come down to, is valuing possessions, taking care of the ball, rebounding. We have to rebound better. We've been a little more, when we get shots on the rim, we've been more efficient lately. I think three of our last four halves, we were over 50%. We were almost 58% in the second half at Maryland. And just, again, it's about valuing the basketball. We need spirited contests on their shooters all over the floor. But they're playing really good basketball. And, you know, don't take that game at Purdue. They do that to a lot of teams in there. They're a team that's, again, playing with a lot of confidence. And Mike is doing a heck of a job with that group.
Fred went on to, and Jacob asked him this, what the heck's causing all the turnovers?
The ones in the last one really bothered, the second half ones really bothered me. You know, we came out, it was two one-hand passes that those are careless. You can't do that, especially on the road, when you give a team that many extra possessions. We had a charge, we had travel, we had a double dribble in that stretch. And you got to find a way to go out there and get shots up on the board. When you shoot 50% and you turn the ball over 10 times, you get five extra bullets out there to get shots on the board. If you shoot 50%, you know, you're looking at another, you know, 8 to 10 points, depending on two or three. So you got to find a way. We got to find a way to do better. The unforced ones are the ones that kill you. And they lead to runouts. They lead to transition. That was the problem in Maryland. They scored 20 points off of our turnovers and get 22 in transition, and they are as good as any team in the country as far as converting off turnovers. So when you give a team pick sixes, it's too hard to overcome, and it leads to confidence. It makes the threes a lot easier when you're getting layups in transition, and we have to be better in that area.
So that was Fred, and can Derek Walker get back? 16 turnovers the last three games for D-Dub.
We're a lot of time for that one.
All right, other side. We'll hear Fred's take on Derek. Derek just looks frustrated.
Yes.
And he should be pissed with the amount of whistles going against him. Now, what do you do about it? You just got to adapt and keep on grinding, because he's been a heck of a grinder his whole career here.
And I think it also, comes from the fact that he looks like a guy who feels like he is shouldering a lot of pressure for this team right now, knowing, you know, we're down a lot of talent. I got to be the guy. He looks like a guy who's playing under that pressure.
Sure. No, I mean, he's got big old shoulders, and there's already been a lot on him this year.
I mean, he's got rebounding now. He's the best offensive scoring option.
And he's a creator.
Yeah.
I mean, he takes it top of the key, and people have adjusted to him off the dribble.
His passing from the high post has been great.
Oh, he's still awesome. I mean, I love watching him. It is, as bad as this team is at shooting, they're not that horrible to watch on offense because of all the back cuts they do and how good a passer he is. I mean, it's watchable basketball. The shooting just gets in the way a lot of times. Hour one winding down next.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time this hour, Bill Dolman with us in about 10 minutes. Get his take on the state of Nebraska. And also remind you about the podcast, Hail Varsity Radio. Take us with the full show or the segments you want to hear, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, get that downloaded, get that subscription. Doesn't cost you anything. And tell a friend about us and give us a review. We're happy to take those. You can also watch the full show, the Hail Varsity YouTube channel. Get a subscription to that. All the best post-press conference, post-game, pre-game, all the analysis with the Hail Varsity YouTube channel. Get your seatbelt on, hands on the wheel, eyes in mind. Straight ahead, the driver has one job. That's to drive. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. All right, we meant to sneak this in before we checked out last segment. Do we have time now, good sir, in flannel?
That we do.
All right, Derek. Getting Derek Walker back, what can he do against Penn State? What can he help on the offensive end? What can he distribute? How can he play make? Can he take care of the basketball? He's feeling the heat a little bit, and he wants to get kind of back to his old self.
With Derek, he's got 16 turnovers in his last three games. Is that a product of just the lack of depth in the backcourt to where you're having to run so much through him, and just by the sheer volume in which he has the ball, he's
I don't think so, Robin. A big part of that is, I mean, we've been playing through Derek all year. It's not something new that we've been doing with him. And, you know, we trust Derek with the ball in his hands. I think his assisted turnover went negative, these last two games. So he's just got to get back. I mean, you know, Derek, listen, he's got a gift of making plays in a crowd, but that's another theme. You know, the one-handed passes are inexcusable, but the second half, we got a little sped up. You know, we got a lot of young guys out there in new positions, so you probably expect some of that out of the young guys. We just can't have it out of our older guys. And, again, we trust Derek. Obviously, we have the ball in his hands a lot, but we played way too much in a crowd in the second half. First half, I thought, very good. When you go back and watch, we had great movement, and we got the ball to the right guy, and we made simple plays, and we got good quality looks at the basket. And, you know, second half, obviously, that reversed. And we had 6 turnovers at halftime. Pretty good for us right now, and then we had 9 in the second to get that number to 15. And again, that's what Illinois does. That's what they thrive off of. But we got to be better moving forward, and we're going to continue to play through Derek. We feel great when the ball's in his hands. We just got to, again, space the floor properly and give him good proper outlets when he's making plays.
Well said by Fred, and it's knowing what they got to do, but can they do it? There's just, I don't want to say trust, but it just was lackadaisical. And that's so unlike him with Derek Walker and just some of the passes he's making. But it's all kind of compounding with the whistles, with the pressure, the losing streak they're in, the frustration. And then all right, who's going to help step up? Who's going to help carry the load? He had a great first half from Griesel. He was nails in that first half and kind of set the tone. I do like the younger guys. I think they're coming along. But Nebraska, they'll keep fighting. Is it going to pay off finally for them on Sunday?
A payoff, I assume you mean a win.
Yeah. I mean, it's as good a shot as any on the docket. Hey, it's Schmitty. Want to tell you about a fantastic opportunity to work for a rapidly growing company that also enjoys the benefits earned with having competitive, stable history of work over 20 years? FSC. The FSC Edge, it's a leading technology innovator serving governmental agencies. Expert services helping worldwide patent offices meet strict processing and publishing timelines while delivering exceptional quality. They support some of the world's largest patent offices throughout the U.S. and Europe. That includes the European Patent Office, the German Patent and Trademark Office, and the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. The only group of companies worldwide to provide such support to all three of these agencies. Working at FSC, you have a chance to work with fun people with great attitudes and learn about patents. You're not on the phone. You're not customer-facing. It's casual dress, and the work environment, it's a new environment with over $2 million in improvements. You have access to generous benefits packages, company support for health and wellness, and you do impactful work on a national scale. Make a difference. Their team's constantly growing, and they're always looking for new people to join their mission. Check out what's available today at fscedge.com.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Thanks for hanging out. It's hour two. It's Hail Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency. For all your equipment financing needs, go Currency. I just did a double check. That stash is coming in. I mean, it's always like going to be there, but it looks thick. We've been watering the thing. I mean, I'm proud of you. It looks good.
Thank you. It's just been, you know, a lot of hard work.
You on some prednisone?
No, there's no performance enhancing drugs here whatsoever.
That's okay.
It's strictly just my own personal hair growth. I've been trying to trim it and keep it looking nice, and we're getting to the length where I think I can maybe start curling on the end again.
Don't do that. My God, Bill Dolman with us, Pride of Fairbury, NBC Sports, the professor, is joining us at Bill Dolman on Twitter. Billy D, you never had a mustache phase, did you?
No, I went through a beard phase a couple of years ago, but I'm very, very impressed, Chris, with your observational skills, given the fact that you see the dude every day. You're looking across the table through the window at him every day, and now you're just noticing that the stash is coming in. So very keen observation.
No, it's thicker than it's been is the point.
I just want to respond.
Well, it just didn't happen during the break. I know it's 5 minutes, but come on.
Well, I just kind of he's bouncing around back there to the intro. I'm like, dude, he's going Freddie Mercury back there. I mean, with the thick stash. I'm proud of it. No, we don't need to.
I would like to let you know though. You asked Bill if he had a mustache phase. This is not a phase.
No, I know.
This is who I am.
You're gearing up for umpiring season, and much like State Patrol, there's more fear with State Patrol folks that pull you over when you have a mustache. If they have a mustache, just like the guy behind the plate, if he's got a mustache, you don't want to jack with him.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's an authoritative take. Bill,
especially if he's packing heat,
for sure. And I pray that Elijah's not doing that when he goes to the ballpark
in the waistband.
Oh, you're going to argue with my balls and strikes, are you?
Say hello to my little friend.
Uh-huh. There we have it, Bill. What did they get your reaction? Not just with the signing class, because I know you're always into recruiting, but more so just the action by rule to really incorporate Coach Osborne. And not every coach has done that. Even some guys that, I don't know, played for him didn't do that. It's one thing to have him at practice. It's another thing to go out of his way like he did at the Outland Award dinner in Omaha to sit with him and break bread. And I think it's very important to Coach Rhule, not just for looks, but I think he's pretty sincere about it.
Yeah, I think it's just another one of the great steps that he has made. And I think by now, for what we've seen and read about Matt Rhule, there's no reason to believe that he's not being genuine in his reverence for Coach Osborne. And I think that's really important for people around Nebraska to see that. You know, I think that we had hoped that we were going to see that when the four-year case of the flu took over and brought in Bill Callahan. And, you know, I asked that question of Bill Callahan at a press conference, you know, how much will, you know, Coach Osborne be involved? And he said, oh, yeah, we'll talk to him. Well, when? You know, when we get around to it, when we get to the O's in the phone book, I guess, you know, so but I genuinely think that there is a reverence for Matt Rhule. He understands the history of Nebraska football very well. He understands, you know, and to a certain extent, you know, here's a guy who grew up around and played for Joe Paterno. And at that time, Tom Osborne and Joe Paterno were, you know, icons in college football. They were the, you know, today it's Sweeney and Saban. And there's probably a couple out there, you know, that are major legends in the game. I'm not going to put Lincoln Riley in that class just yet. But if you go back into the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, you know, putting aside the demise of Joe Paterno, but he was, Tom was, Bobby Bowden, Bear Bryant, you know, for 20 years, they were the icons of the game. And I think Matt Rhule respects that. And maybe because he was so closely tied to Paterno that he understood Tom's place in that. And now to be side by side with Tom Osborne and holding the same position that he held, you know, it's just another great card that Matt Rhule has played.
You go from having dinner with him to now he's going to be the feature with the coaches clinic. I mean, there's been 100 coaches since T.O. retired, and this is the first time he's going to be speaking at a clinic.
Yeah, and what I think is, you know, really significant about that, I think the turnout would be great, but I think it's going to be even greater. You know, look, you know, Coach Osborne's in his mid-80s now, and it has just meant so much to so many people for so long that I think you're going to have a tremendous turnout that is keenly in tune to what he has to say, because how many more times will they have that opportunity to do so? I kind of liken it a little bit when I heard Rhule talking about that, you know, to, you know, those legendary rockers who go around for one final concert and you just got to be there because it might be the last time that they're on stage. Mm-hmm. And I think for a football coach, whether they have been in the business for decades or just a couple of years, I think that, you know, people will benefit and can say, you know what, I heard Tom Osborne, and I think it's meaningful.
Bill, really quick, if there was actually a legendary rock band going around in their final tour, like what's the one that you have to make a stop on the tour? What band is it? What rocker?
I mean, like right now?
Like, yeah, like.
It can't be Kiss because they're on their 10th final tour. Motley Crue's on their 3rd final tour, you know. I would love to have seen a final tour of Queen with Freddie Mercury.
Okay.
I mean, that would have been a great final one, but nobody does their final concert anymore.
No.
Come on.
Van
Morrison. Van Morrison, without a doubt.
There it is.
That'll never top. But you saw him in Dublin, though. Like, that won't be topped,
yeah.
Will it? I mean, seeing him in Dublin's.
Unless I see him over there again, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, man, who I'd pick.
You know, if Skid Row could get Sebastian Bach back in the fold, I mean, anybody from the 80s is going to go to that one.
Yeah, that's true.
It's kind of impossible.
Give the people what they want.
Yeah. it's kind of impossible with the whole Cobain thing, but Nirvana. Nirvana would be a great one if, like, they got the crew back together.
I guess I would love to see Pearl Jam again. I saw them. It's almost been 9 years. That's crazy. 9 years since they've been here.
Yeah, PBA.
Bill, let's talk basketball here. And Fred Hoiberg in Nebraska. And Nebraska had an 0-for-2 week. They get Penn State on Sunday. And the discussion point, and I know you guys touched on this, Elijah, with the No Block, No Rock pod, but you've got reality, that's wins and losses. The numbers that are the numbers for Fred. But then you have, all right, what it looks like now. And, yeah, they've been throwing the ball away. But they've been competitive, and it sounds like they're going to keep fighting despite being depleted. From a momentum standpoint, big picture, I know basketball's individual as a sport, but if you're Trev, do you stop the good feels, and do you just put up with a tough season under bad circumstances due to injury, or do you just say, look, I can't see this anymore working out, we got to make a move? Let's talk about here the momentum that's going on in the program, despite the losses.
I don't think you can make a move. You went through last year. You made an arrangement. Fred reinvented his team, changed his philosophy, dusted off the Mo Iba playbook, you know, dropped down below 75 points per game and played tough defense. And, you know, Nebraska was a team after they, you know, kicked Creighton in the nether regions and gut punched Iowa. Everybody's feeling good about that team, right? And they're doing what they were asked to do. And I go back to what we talked about, you know, last week when they beat Creighton, Trev had that moment where he brought two players into his office and gave them black shirts. And there were probably more that deserved it, but he gave them to Juwan Gary and Emmanuel Bandamel. And who are the two of the best defensive players, not just at Nebraska in the Big Ten, but in the country? I think it was Bandamel like in the top 30 and like every defensive stat that they keep these days. You know, he's one of the best defensive players in the country, and he's out. And then Gary's out. And now you're playing a bunch of freshmen again. And you're asking, you know, Sam Griesel and Derek Walker to carry that team, and everybody knows it. So I get, you know, the losing those two guys was incredibly detrimental. And a month ago, we're talking about if Nebraska goes 7-5 down the stretch, they probably play themselves into an NIT bid if they can go above 500 in conference play. And then those injuries happen, one and then another. And I think one, that's, you know, Fred did what he was asked to do, and he had done a very good job until the injuries took effect. Secondly, on the other side of it, Nebraska is coming off of an arduous, exhausting football coaching search. And you've hired a guy that everybody, not just a guy, but his entire staff, that everybody just has seemed to have embraced, and they seem to have embraced everybody. So why go through another search? Why go through the process? Create a little controversy. Right now, things are going in the right direction for the Nebraska athletic department as a whole. And I think let's just be happy that search went really well, or so it seems. And let's keep that vibe going for the whole culture and not do it again, even though there won't be near the intensity if there was a basketball hire. But let's just stick with it. Let those young players develop. Ramil Lloyd comes in as a point guard next year, and maybe those guys come back healthy and ready to go, and you do it all again, and maybe the shots will fall the right way.
Well, Bill, do you think that Husker Nation will get behind Fred for another year? I mean, part of this, you have to evaluate, is are these season ticket holders going to, you know, go get season tickets again next year? Is Nebraska going to be able to sell seats to Pinnacle Bank Arena? It's a huge arena. And if the results aren't there, the fans going to want to show up. I think that's a question that has to be taken into account here. So do you think the fans will get behind Hoiberg for another year, or do you think they're tired of it?
Well, especially, I think they will, especially if you put some Guinness taps in that building now. You know, I think
booze is the answer.
You might get a few more people in the seats, you know. Now, look, I think people were behind that team the way they were playing. You know, it wasn't a 75 to 85 point per night team, right? People loved the way they were playing, and that was a 60 to 65 point per night team. Now, they put 85 on the board against Iowa, and they loved that. People loved what they did against Creighton, and people were coming in, and they were excited to watch them play. I think people understand. They're smart enough to understand that, you know, those injuries were significant. And if football goes well next fall, they'll carry that feel-good vibe into basketball season, and then the pressure will probably really be on. But, you know, Fred, he did what he was asked to do. He put a team that was competitive, a team that fought hard, a team that people liked to watch to play until the injuries came in. And things changed really, really dramatically. I think people will get behind him again. Fred's not embarrassing anybody. And not that he's embarrassing himself as a coach, he's not doing anything dumb on the outside where you're going, oh, now what's in the paper, you know? He's an honorable man, and I think he's done an honorable job and did what was asked of him and just had some really bad breaks or tears and sprains, as the case might be.
Bill, got about 2 minutes. You spent a lot of time in the NBA, covering the NBA, and going to go here. What's your take on Kyrie Irving asking the Nets to send him away? Lakers, Mavs, Suns, great talent, big-time headache.
Well, wherever he goes, he's going to be a big-time headache. But, you know, the teams that need to win, the Lakers need to win. They're on the outside of looking on the playoff picture. But he's not just a he's a different kind of headache, isn't he? He's not necessarily a malcontent, you know, bad dude. He's just got some alternative thoughts that, you know, that might have people scratching their head in the locker room. As a, you know, they're not going to avoid him because he's a jerk. They're going to avoid him because I just can't get into the conversations as to where you want to go. All right. But he's a great basketball player, and he still is a great basketball player. And if somebody's going to make a playoff run and they let him go, look, it's pro basketball, and it's just a couple of months. You know, we're talking March, April, May, June. Maybe it's a gamble worth taking. You know, if he gets him to do what he wants, yeah.
I just wonder. I wonder how KD responds, right? Because you got him and Kyrie, and to be honest, to be Kyrie's teammate can be good and terrible. Like on the nights that it's clicking, you got elite help. And a guy that's going to be able to get his own points, but also distribute. But now if you're KD, you're trying to come back from injury, do you say, all right, send me Russ. Let's try and recreate 2012 again. I mean, if you're the Lakers, Russ out for a long time.
The whole super team thing didn't work when KD wanted to build his own. You know, it's worked out pretty well when LeBron wants to build his own. Or, when KD joined Golden State, you know, that worked out well. But when he said, I want to get my own guys together, excuse me, it didn't work out so well. You know, look, and one thing about the NBA, too, if they bring him on board, it's not as though all those guys are hanging.
They show up at
the arena in their limo, they leave in their limo or their Range Rover. It's not as, you know, what's the old line about the Yankees when Alex Rodriguez played, that it was, you know, one plane and 25 limos. So it's not like college basketball where you are all together all the time, right? I mean, you bring him in, you're only playing with him a few hours a day.
Billy D, we'll see you this weekend. Thanks for the time, bud.
Okay, go Big Red. See you guys.
Pardon the interruption, but I'd like to save you some money. I'm Brandon Vogel, managing editor of Hail Varsity, and I wanted to offer listeners of this podcast $10 off the price of an annual subscription. That means that you can get everything we produce, 10 issues of our monthly magazine, our annual football yearbook, and all of the premium content we produce at hailvarsity.com. Just go to hailvarsity.com/subscribe and enter the promo code GBR for $10 off a full year of Hail Varsity. That's hailvarsity.com/subscribe, promo code GBR.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency. Brady Altman's HailVarsity.com and magazine is in his office. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. Well, Rule may not exhale, but you can exhale for just a half second, Brady. Great coverage on signing day 2023 this week from you and the crew at HailVarsity.com and magazine. So what's next, man? What's next for you? And let's gear up for it should be pretty entertaining spring season for Nebraska football.
Yeah, immediately. There's still a couple of all-star games, East-West Shrine, O'Shawn and Travis Vokal have played in. Trey Palmer will be in the Senior Bowl tomorrow. Keeping an eye on them. And a lot of meeting, a lot of, you know, getting to meet this staff, those who are still around in February, and then writing about kind of positional breakdowns, how things have shaken out, what this new signing period does, who's looking where, and what each position looks like kind of as we build up into a busier March once kind of, I guess, the staff and the 2024 recruiting class kind of starts to fall together a little bit more, and then the work never truly ends, so we'll just keep plugging away.
Well, your takeaway with signing day and the additions Nebraska got, and overall, what you think of the number? I mean, I thought Coach Rule laid it out pretty good earlier this week at signing day. Just, hey, guys have an opportunity. Is this a fit for them, and are they a fit for us? But the clean slate theme, I think, is going to be pretty true.
Yeah, I think he's kind of following a blueprint that was kind of laid forward by Lincoln Riley at USC. And I can't think of kind of schools have adopted since then because NCAA rules have kind of relaxed a little bit where how you get to 85 kind of doesn't matter as much as you're at 85. And keep in mind, a lot of the 103 now, I think, from Nebraska scholarship count, a lot of those guys hadn't really seen the field or seen significant playing time, I should say, in their time in Nebraska. So Rule wanted to bring in guys through the transfer portal or even just straight, you know, junior college, high school guys into this recruiting class who he thinks could be a potential impact player in Nebraska. Maybe not right away, but down the line, he sees some development there. Having said that, it's a big class now, and they want to prove who belongs at Nebraska, who fits his vision, who is willing to grind and be part of that standard and that greater work ethic that he aspires to instill here at Nebraska. Now, some might leave on their own. Some might declare the transfer portal because they don't see a future in Matt Rule's vision, which I think is understandable and believable by most parts. I mean, kid wants to go play somewhere, let him go play somewhere. And I think the Rule coaching staff is more than amenable to help them find a place like that. So I think that's really what we're going to see in winter workouts. And then in the spring camp is Trev Albert said in his monthly radio show, it's going to be football. And I think he meant it's going to be like a real football, because these guys are going to be playing for spots, you know, like not just the spring game, but in spring practice, these guys will be putting pedal to the metal because they know that they might not really have a locker left for him, you know, after that.
Brady Oltmans is with us here. It's Hail Varsity Radio. And Brady, as we move forward, what is the metric you're going to use to evaluate the success of this recruiting class? Matt Rule put it together pretty quickly, so I think at least I'm expecting a little bit of attrition from this recruiting class. I'm not sure if attrition is going to be the metric I'm going to use to determine the success of this, but what metric are you going to be using to determine how successful this recruiting class was?
Well, it's an interesting question because I think a lot of the attrition that we see now, or at least common now in college football, is a lot of the guys, the immediate transfers, the four or five stars who don't get to see the field right away. And I think a lot of that is a lot of these guys are studs, and they're studs from 12 years old, and they'd have never seen the bench since the fifth grade. And they think that they buy into, I can develop, I can be a bench player, role player. But then by October, November, they're like, when's my time going to come around? And they realize they don't like it as much, or they're not as okay with it as much as they thought they were going to be. And then they end up leaving somewhere. I think Matt Rule's coaching staff has conveyed it to recruits and part of this 2023 coach or recruiting class, I should say, that's their plan. You know, they want to sell guys on the plan. They're not saying, oh, yeah, come on and you'll play right away, and then pull the rug out from under them. And then they, you know, kind of get soured by it. I think a lot of those transfers, like the Eric Gilberts, MJ Shermans, maybe even, you know, Corey Collier, those guys might play right away. Some of those your plug and play transfer guys, Ben Scott's of the world, you know, the guys that they get in are primed to go into positions of need and work. Whereas a lot of the 18-year-olds or high school seniors that come in right away are a little bit more of a developmental project, especially on the lines for them. So it's going to be kind of tough to gauge what success looks like. But if they get a couple of guys that can step in, maybe even a couple of those younger guys fill in spots later down the road, maybe give you a few good snaps on special teams or something, I think the coaching staff will probably feel pretty good about that.
The coaching staff, to me, will make it pretty clear the why, right? The listen, we don't think you're ready, or why don't you take some time to develop? And maybe if you get some kids that are more mature, they'll see it themselves versus the point you laid out where if you're used to having it one way because you've been the best dude on the field or even in your city, it's a whole different ball game. So it'll be important to get guys that truly embrace competition and then can deal with, all right, not being the guy right away, but trusting in they'll get me to where I need to go finish line wise, and I'll see the field eventually. I mean, it comes back to, you know, the personalities they're recruiting, Brady.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of the things Matt Rhule kind of said when he was introduced was his first meeting with the team was going to be, you didn't choose me, I chose you. You know, a lot of you guys, none of them were recruited by Rhule at that point. So if any of them wanted out or didn't see themselves in his scheme, his vision of the program, any of the workouts, if none of that really vibed with them, nobody would blame them if they wanted out. And I think everybody wants to give it a shot because everybody thinks they can be a ball player and play at a high level. Some just realistically aren't going to fit that scheme because Rhule likes his speed guys on the outside. He likes to develop big, girthy, physical guys on the line. And some just frankly just aren't going to be able to adapt and suit in well with the strength and conditioning workouts because the way Corey Campbell does things is a little bit different than the last guy. You know, each guy kind of has their own specialties, their own workouts, their own drills that other guys are going to shine from, and inherently other guys aren't going to stand out as much from. So it's going to be because all of these guys are handpicked by Matt Rhule, it's going to give him a really good chance to pinpoint guys that he likes and guys who will fit well to play right away.
Brady, whenever you talk about guys playing right away, what do you think a healthy number of freshmen getting, you know, roles in the team next year? Might not be starting on the offense or the defense, but what do you think would be a healthy number of freshmen that we'll see on the field in some capacity next year?
Outside of four games, because I think that they'll probably want the vast majority of them to redshirt next year. Outside of four games, I think really only two come to mind, and that would be Prince Will Mamielin and Malachi Coleman. And even Malachi come and go with just because of the sheer size of the receivers room. I mean, that's a pretty competitive group there. And if not Malachi, I'd probably say Riley Van Poppel. Maybe he's got a drive in him that's really good to see. I think he could potentially see some field there. But Prince Will, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that front seven on the defense. But I mean, he's just physically built. Like, you get him a little bit of college experience, he might be like I almost hate to make the comparison, but he's almost like an Ernest Hausman way of, like, you know, you throw him in college football a little bit, he might kind of sink a little bit, but next thing you know, he's up paddling on his own and tracking down a Michigan quarterback for a sack, you know? So those are the two, maybe two and a half, that kind of stand out. But I would say most of the freshmen will probably redshirt in some capacity next year.
I'm interested in seeing Fields, the linebacker, where he makes his progress, and if, you know, through four games, assuming everything goes well and he's big and strong and fast enough to play, and they kind of raved about him back in December. You know, I look at the scholarship breakdown, and Brady has a good story up HaleVarsity.com post-signing day. You look at the scholarship breakdown right now, nine linebackers, that seems all right, but okay, you know, you've got two that have been here for 100 years, bless their heart, and then you've got five you haven't seen a lot of. You have six quarterbacks. What's the ideal number? Four? Is that typical? Is six excessive? Six running backs? They want one more O-lineman to get to that 16 number. They're at 15. 12 D linemen, four edge. That seems low, but again, you're going to mix and match with talent and what you're good at to maybe get off the edge. So that edge/nickel makes the move up to eight, right? And then 19 defensive backs. Brady, how's your leg? They just have one punter.
Well, I've got some eligibility left, but I don't know if you're going to want to use it. But
see, it was directional, I promise.
Well, the numbers speak to competition. That's what they want. They want to put guys together and see, you know, who cuts it, who's got the medal and who doesn't. Like I said, the front seven one is really interesting to me just because in that the 3-3-5 defense or the hybrid defense, the things that they want to do. I mean, we heard from Terrence Knight and kind of said, good luck. You're going to lose sleep trying to scheme over it because you don't know who's lining up over what your responsibilities are going to be. And keep in mind, this coaching staff hasn't really had time to really get together and think of getting on the same page in terms of scheme yet, because most of them are just, you know, getting their recruiting wheels off. But the 3-3-5 inherently gives you a chance where your big uglies up front, your interior defensive linemen, it allows you to work with less of them and operate more of your lateral speed guys. And to your point about Eric Fields, I think he could be incredibly talented in that role on the exterior at the linebacker. I'm curious to see what the adjustment to college from Ardmore, Oklahoma is for him. But if he can adapt to that well, they've got plenty of guys in that spot. Even a Chief Borders that can adjust to the speed and come up from a special teams role that he had at Florida and really fill that defensive spot at Nebraska. These are spots that you get a guy with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder and some speed, especially laterally and agility to move in that defense. I mean, that dog will hunt for me. You know, you see that on the field. That's kind of what you're looking for.
Brady, last thought here, about a minute to flip it around to the offensive side of the ball. Which position battle are you going to be most excited to watch this spring?
Oh, man, that's tough. I'd almost say running back, because I think Anthony Grant's got it, you know, he's pretty well situated, but they really like a lot of that, you know, AJ and even Emmett Johnson. Both of those guys have shown out. The line is interesting to me because of the new additions. How do you kind of shift around the guys that have been at Nebraska and who fits in where and what scheme? You know, you kind of have an idea of how they're looking like, but and just – it growth. How much better and how much growth does that offensive line look like in 2023?
Read him with HaleVarsity.com and magazine. Follow him at Brady Altman's on Twitter, and can subscribe. HaleVarsity.com/offer is where you go to get the digital and magazine. Brady, have a weekend, and we'll be able to talk some ball next week with some Super Bowl. Thanks for the time, bud.
Appreciate you guys.
Now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back into it, it's Hail Varsity Radio. Burke's Best Bets, VSiN Sports Network with Danny Burke. Of course, Danny will be covering the weekends with VSiN. Find him on Twitter at DannyBurke5. And as always, the Danny Burke podcast. Pride of Chicago, are you hard at work finding those perfect in-game options? And obviously covering all the analysis of the prop bets, because there's some winners. You've got them circled, don't you?
we're trying to get there early on. There's still mountains to get through, and luckily we have 2 weeks to kind of decipher all of them. So I've only really gone through a handful of them up to this point, or just focusing in on the actual game itself. But I have nitpicked a few here and there. But then this upcoming week, we'll certainly be going head on fully into all the props and kind of just seeing where the numbers adjust to. So even though it's, you know, you get the weekend off, still exciting to kind of sort through all of them. Could be stressful, but, you know, quality over quantity is the goal.
What do you think of the matchup? I mean, is this going to be a situation where it's going to be a great ball game, but you'll be able to find some value?
Yeah, you're not fully confident in a play pre-flop, and we preach this a lot when we talk, right? And I think you could kind of almost correlate it to what we saw in the AFC Championship game with the Chiefs and the Bengals, because if you recall, my strategy was waiting for the in-game number because I wasn't completely sure of what to expect out of Patrick Mahomes and his ankle. You probably assumed that the first couple of sequences he was going to be fine because they did whatever they did to his ankle and the adrenaline's going, and that was the case. And then they finally got to him. Well, what that allowed you to get was a way better in-game opportunity on Cincinnati. So I was able to get, like, the Bengals +7 in the hook, the Bengals +3 in the hook, because even though they were down by 10, you figured they'd make adjustments. They were consistently the best second-half team in the league, and that's what ended up happening, right? They covered both numbers. So this is reminiscent of that in the sense of what the spread is pre-flop and how volatile these markets and teams in general may be. So if you're not fully convinced already, you could just wait and try to attack from an in-game standpoint that way. You don't have to force yourself into a bet immediately, which is always a misconception in general, but especially with the Super Bowl, if you're around people who've got like 10 bets going at once, that's why we say quality over quantity. You don't need action nonstop, and you're probably going to find it either way just because of, you know, you'll be involved in squares or betting with a friend or, you know, doing some kind of novelty prop. But yeah, I don't think there's any rush to make a bet that's clear-cut. You can obviously make arguments for both sides here. And look, I certainly lean a little bit more one way versus the other, but I haven't bet anything yet with it.
Danny, how about the national anthem? Is that something you're looking to bet right now? The line's already been going up. I've been following that one. That's probably my favorite Super Bowl bet every single year. And it's a line that opened at about 1:59. It's now up over 2 minutes, 2:05, with Chris Stapleton being announced as the singer. I mean, that seems like something you got to lock in now, because that line may continue to rise. Chris Stapleton, a country artist, you know.
Soulful.
You know, he's going to hold those long notes, going to hold a high note somewhere in there. Like, I don't know. I think that might be one of the bets. I think it's good to get in now.
That one's always funny because you always see the immediate line movement going toward the over, especially as we get closer and they do the sound check, then like the information gets leaked. But I mean, those props are fun to do, but they always limit you on them to like $50 at most. So you can't really go too crazy since you already got that inside information. But I think you make a good point, right? He's got the soul in him. He's going to, you know, stretch it out as long as possible. And if he's a man of the people, he knows that the common Joe is going to be betting the over. So I'm sure he'll try to stretch that out as long as possible. But, hey, I'll trust your inside sources on that one, Elijah. I'm waiting to get the confirmation from you.
Danny, some props you're looking at right now, either first to score a touchdown, individual rushing numbers, what's on your radar?
Yeah, I've bet one prop so far, and it's with Isaiah Pacheco. And it kind of stood out to me because he really got involved in the passing game last week, where that has not been the case the entire season. But last week he had 5 catches for, I think, maybe 40-something receiving yards. But I think the same could be utilized out of him in terms of the passing effort, because you're going up against arguably the best pass defense in Philadelphia. You have still probably a hobbled Patrick Mahomes, and the Eagles have a great pass rush. So if the secondary is doing their job, limiting those guys deep, the pressure's coming on Mahomes pretty quickly, he's not able to improvise and scramble as much, which does create separation for his receivers. Well, then he's going to have to throw to the safe, short, secure route, which is the dump off for the check down with Pacheco. And that's kind of what they utilized with him against the Bengals. So I think you'll be able to get maybe around like 15 to 20 receiving yards with him there, because even though he didn't get a lot this season, he still made the most of it, getting about 10 yards per catch. And then on the ground effort, he averaged about 50 rushing yards per game. And the weakest part of Philadelphia's run or defense is their run defense. They allow about 4.7 yards per rush attempt. And over the last 3 games, that number has risen to 5. And that's the philosophy of how to beat Philadelphia. You got to control time of possession. You got to keep their offense off the field and then put the pressure on Hurts and company, much like the Commanders did. I mean, they completely dominated the ground effort, and that's how they ended up winning. Now, Kansas City doesn't have the best running offense themselves, but you got to figure that's got to be part of their strategy throughout the majority of the beginning stages of this game. So I think they're going to try to set that up both on the ground attack with Pacheco, who gets the majority of snaps compared to McKinnon, and then in the passing game when they need those short routes. So I bet him over 63.5 rush and receiving combined. I know the number's as high as 68.5. If you look around, I know some books have 64.5. So if you get to 64, I'd still play it. If it's as high as 68.5, I'd maybe just flirt with the rushing yards if you get it under 50 instead. That would probably be the best way to go about it.
Danny, I remember your advice from last year on Super Bowl MVP. That was to pick the team you think is going to win and just take their quarterback, whether it be Joe Burrow or Matt Stafford. And I want to get your take on this season. Is that a good direction to go yet again this year? Or do you think maybe it's going to be a non-quarterback winning the MVP award this year?
Well, here's the thing. If you want to do the correlation with Kansas City, it's realistically going to be Patrick Mahomes, regardless. I mean, the only other guy you'd really make an argument for would be Travis Kelce, but when his stats get padded, naturally so do Patrick Mahomes, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a, you know, one-for-one type of situation, and you already have the narrative with Mahomes for regular season MVP and for the fact that he has his busted ankle. So if he's able to overcome that, he's going to get the nod more often than not. If you want to go outside of that and you like the Eagles, that would be your chance to go somewhere else, because the Eagles, if they don't have to force Hurts to throw it consistently, they won't do that. Like, they want to get the ground and pound effort going and establish the dominance on that ground attack like they did against the 49ers and the Giants. But then the issue becomes, all right, well, which running back is going to get a majority of the workload? Because you had, Boston Scott, you had who was a Gainwell, and then obviously Sanders. Like, they all kind of go by committee. You would think Sanders would be the most obvious guy because he usually gets the most reps. But does that mean he's going to get red zone reps? Or does that mean he's just going to get the most handoffs? So it's kind of a tough correlation in that regard. And then again, with the Eagles, like with the receivers, it could be any of them. And you would imagine A.J. Brown would have the best chance. But if his stats get padded, Hurts' stats get padded. And maybe because you imagine he's going to finish second into Mahomes for the regular season voting, and some people thought he would win if he didn't get injured, maybe that will give him the nod to some of these voters. People are thinking Reddick's a hot choice because he had one good game. look, I wouldn't jump into that realistically, because not only the chances he replicates that are slim to none, but the odds have drastically changed because he's the hot topic of who to bet on. But also one thing to remember, these votes get sent in like 3-4 minutes before the game ends. Aaron Donald, I had like 18-1, and he should have been the MVP. And like two of his biggest plays and like two of the biggest plays in the game occurred in those last 2 minutes where he had big sacks, but the votes were already established, so they couldn't even give it to him. So you got to keep that in mind as well, that you may get shafted because those votes get put in before the game even ends.
Daddy Burke with his Burke's Best Bets. Daddy, will catch up again next week and have more of the Super Bowl props and get your take on the ball game, the line, the over-under. Daddy, thanks for the time today.
Hey, you got it, fellas. Stay warm. I'll talk to you next week.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Well, I'm glad we checked in with Bill Dolman on Kyrie Irving. Charles Barkley just went scorched earth on Kyrie Irving with Tony Kornheiser. Can't be counted on any team, man. But Chuck's one of a kind, man. Tomorrow morning, weekend edition, 7 to 9, Hail Varsity Radio. Myself, Elijah Herbal, the one and only Mark Kranak. The week that's been, we'll hit that, probably talk some more recruiting. Rewind will feature Amir Abdullah, and we'll get ready for Super Week next week as we gear up for the Super Bowl, and plenty to get into there. There's a lot of good basketball tomorrow. Kansas is at Iowa State, specifically. That is good. Indiana hopes to knock off their hated in-state rival, Indiana hosting Purdue. You've got Gonzaga and St. Mary's tomorrow. That's big time. Gonzaga's faded a little bit. That's okay, though. Auburn's at Tennessee. The probation tip-off championship challenge. Is that what we call it? Texas is at Kansas State. And you've got, that's about it. Not really any great Pac-12 matchups. But KU, man, they had a little payback on their mind this week with K-State in action. So.
I think I might throw some ribs on the smoker tomorrow. We'll
are you going to do that. Ribs tomorrow?
I think tomorrow's the day where you get the test recipe in before the Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? Like the recipe where you want to make sure everything's perfect for the Super Bowl. I've only done ribs probably once in the past year, so make sure you get that recipe locked in, get it smoked up, and see how it turns out.
Are you how much are you reliant on sauce?
Not very much.
Because you're more of a dry rub, yes. And then maybe glaze a little sauce.
So what I've actually been doing a little bit more is going more of a Memphis style, where you go the mop sauce while it's smoking.
Okay.
Less of a true barbecue sauce, more of like a vinegar base.
Yep.
And you mop it with that, and then that kind of locks in the flavor. And then, as you said, just caramelize it with sauce at the end.
You go on St. Louis style, or you go on Baby Back?
Yet to decide. I think the rack I have at home is St. Louis, but I think Baby Back might
Are huge and thick. It's like your Fred Flintstone.
I think Baby Back might be the way to go for the Super Bowl. So then I have to go, do I go get myself a whole new rack of Baby Back ribs just to test that out?
I think you do.
I think you
go Baby Back, and what you do, you know to coat with yellow mustard.
Yes.
That's your binder.
Yes.
Then you rub and sit on there and pour a crown or seven and let it smoke.
And I did a pork butt about a month ago, and I have a jalapeno mustard.
Ooh.
That I used on that, and that actually turned out phenomenal. Where it doesn't bring out that much flavor whenever you just use it to bind the dry rub, mm-hmm. but it gave it a little bit of something I liked. I think I'm going to try that on the ribs, too.
I've been on a overdose of pork tenderloin because I did two last Sunday. I didn't finish them, but I found me a pork tenderloin with teriyaki. And then the rub. I got to shoot you a screenshot. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning about it. But there's the rub that I don't know if it would work on. I think it'll work on anything, but it works on the pork tenderloin that I got to send you. It's a Traeger rub.
It's Traeger. See, I've been using a couple of the Meat Church barbecue rubs, and I've been liking those a lot. And I also love Bad Byron's butt rub. That's the classic.
That is good. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the weather. And we'll talk to you tomorrow morning with a weekend edition. It's Hail Varsity. We're presented by Currency. Thanks.
A Huda Media Production.
Heard at Sports Radio. Every weekday morning from 7 to 10 a.m.
Coming up on Friday's show, it's a free-for-all as usual. We'll talk with Chad Forbes of NFL Draft Bites about all the things going on in the NFL. Mike Sonner from Herd at Sports stops by with all his takes on the latest local sports action. And, of course, we'll do our weekly check-in with former Husker and current pizza shop owner Matt Versal.
Take a dive into the latest news and all things sports. Herd at Sports Radio with Ravi Lula and Damon Benning.